So it is the last talk in a series. We've been looking at the things that the mind does and understanding the nature of the mind so that we're not always at the mercy of it. And I do want to talk some about this last little bit of it tonight, looking at how the mind constructs the sense of the past and the future. But first, I just want to take this opportunity to thank you all very much from the bottom of my heart. It has been a wonderful residency. I've so enjoyed being here and meeting. I met some new people this time and seeing the old friends. And I just want to take this opportunity to mirror back to you that, you know, my experience of you is that what we have here is a community of people who have a very profound wisdom and understanding already and are putting it into practice in their lives. And I know that you see that in each other, and I want to encourage you to keep seeing that in each other. These kinds of communities are hard won, you know, and this community, I think, is very, very special. And it's part of the pleasure that I have in coming here is talking to resourceful, mature practitioners. It's certainly gratifying when people understand Dhamma and are able to use and reflect on it in the way that we do together. And it makes one feel, it certainly feels, it makes me feel like what I'm doing is useful and valuable to people. So that's my side of it. But, you know, your side of it is to take that, continue to do what it is that you've been doing for all these years and build on one's own individual insight. And as important, if not more important, the camaraderie that you have with each other. It's priceless, absolutely priceless. So again, I want to thank you for your time and attention and the care and support that you've shown towards me. And I just want to mirror back to you your own wonderment. Thank you. So tonight I want to look at this. This is a frontier, in a way. At least it was for me in practice to be able to see, really probe into the depths of the mind and see how it is that through attachment to the mind's activity that we call perception, the sanyakanda, we get a very strong sense of the past and the future. Just to consider how the mind remembers. What we have experienced, what we have sensed, what we have felt and thought in the past, and recognize that phenomenologically. This is something that the mind does, and how it plans, it fantasizes, it imagines, it creates, it puts things together, and it gets a sense or an imagining of something out there. In the future, something that's going to happen, some way that we're going to be. And through these activities, these two activities of sanya, the perception kanda, and our attachment to them, we get a very strong sense of something back there that has happened, that is our history and our past, and something out there that is yet to happen, that is our future, but that we're going to be born into. You know, and the feeling of that is very, very strong and very, very real and palpable. And yet it doesn't really have any intrinsic reality. It's only happening in terms of thoughts and ideas and perceptions in this moment that are being clung to and projected into. It's a fascinating thing to explore in one's own mind. So here, if you can get a sense of this, right in this activity, you get the underpinnings of all of the leaning in the mind, the looking towards what's next, the becoming, what Buddha called the longing for something out there that is very much what constitutes a lot of our suffering, because it creates a discord, a discontent with what is. In the present moment, and also is a state that's actually very agitated, even as it's unfolding. And so you also get this feeling of what he called non-becoming, which is the bit that particularly doesn't want to be born into the past, doesn't want to, like, memories come up about what's happened, and maybe they're not so pleasant memories, and one wishes that they weren't there. One wishes that the situation that we've had to experience in the past didn't happen. And many hours, both on and off the cushion, are spent entangled in these kinds of arisings and fabrications, really, in the mind. And the identification with both of these, imaginings and recollecting the past memories, are the key players in keeping us out of touch with now. What's happening now? What's actually going on right here, right now? Which is the only place where anything can ever be resolved or dealt with, you know. But it doesn't feel that way when we're caught or tangled in anything that is of this nature. So our objective here, then, is just to see the truth of this. You know, even if only for a moment, and this can happen at any moment. You know, it's certainly, I've seen it, I bet some of you have too, and certainly talked to a lot of people where maybe you're just walking around or standing in line at the bank or at the grocery store or something like that, and you have a thought about something that has happened, or you have a thought about something that might happen, right? And because maybe you're particularly present and zeroing in on that in the moment, you suddenly become aware, I'm thinking, this is a thought. You know, and that whole propulsion, if you will, to be born into these past and future-oriented thinking can be completely dispelled, completely eradicated in the moment. And all the pain and suffering that goes with it, you know, because this is a very tangled state in and of itself, not to mention the content of what it is that we're getting tangled in can often be very, very painful. So just, you know, right there, right then and there, one can see it. And it's one of the beauties of it, working with this as practice, is that all that we have to be able to do is to see it in that way. And then you begin to realize that you haven't left. You've always been here, you know. But the content of the thoughts gives a very visceral sense of some other place, you know. But we're trying to get here and trying to know here as fully and comprehensively as possible. But this is tricky stuff because the habit is so deeply entrenched, and it all seems so real. And it is real. I mean, to be fair, things did happen to us. Things are going to happen. We do have appointment books, and we're probably going to see the doctor next week. You know, there's a conventional reality to that. But, you know, the Buddha would talk about that strictly as conventional reality. It carries with it no intrinsic reality whatsoever. And it only takes maybe something to disrupt that dramatically for us to really begin to get this. You know, like I'll never forget when my brother-in-law died a few years ago. And what's still hanging on his bulletin board over his desk is the calendar with the little sticky notes about where he was going to be and what he was going to do in the days that are the days after he actually passed away, you know. And my sister keeps them there. And she's partly not ready to take it down, but partly it was such a stunning reality check. Oh my goodness, you know, he really thought he was going to be doing that. And he really thought he was going to go here. And it's no different for any of us. Certainly that's a dramatic example, but it's no different for any of us. And you know, we're not trying to be morbid about all of this. We're not trying to soak in these kinds of thoughts of ultimate demise or anything like that, but more to get a handle on ideas, notions, thoughts that can, if they're not seen and not understood, if their nature isn't understood, they can plague us. I mean, how many hours have you spent tormented about the past or, you know, feeling anxious about the future? You know, imagine the possibility of being free of all of that. You know, or at least diminishing it significantly. You know, so it's really, I mean, I don't know how this happens. It's quite amazing. You know, we have this capacity to look and watch and see how this goes on in our own minds. And it's really, really quite amazing. I mean, one moment you're sitting here minding your own business, and up pops Grandma, you know. And there she is in all her wonderment and glory. And you can have this, Grandma, feeling, you know. Sometimes I like to look around the room when we're in meditation, you know, and you see people, some people are sitting there with a big grin on their face, you know, and you go, I wonder what they're thinking about, you know. And other people are sitting there all, you know, teary-eyed and all, you know, what are they thinking about? You know, you have the in the moment when that memory comes up, all of the accompanying feelings arise with it, and very easily we're born into it. And we're not, in a way, we're not trying not to do that. We want to just know that that's what's happening, and it has implications for us as we work with this. And so, you know, you can have these happy memories and feel all that happiness again, or you can have painful memories, and in the moment you feel that pain all over again, and you can see how the mind is still delighting and resisting, you know, delighting in and trying to deal with in a finger snap. Don't you see? I mean, isn't this the stuff that takes you away when you're just trying to sit there mindfully aware of the breathing, you know, and all of a sudden you're off in this whole world, you know, and the memories aren't any more real than a mirage. You know, but they sure feel it when they're happening. Or maybe we think of something that we have to do later somewhere down the road, and we rehearse it, you know. Remember that book years ago, You Don't Have to Rehearse to Be Yourself, you know. And that title said it all, you know, because one spends a lot of time rehearsing and planning. And basically what the mind is trying to do is make everything certain. Make everything clear, be on top of things, manage, direct the course of our lives. And you can come away from moments when you're lost in these kinds of plans and fantasies and imagining with this sense of, there, I'm all set. I got it. Now I know what's going to happen. I'm on top of it, you know. And the delusion doesn't even hit us, you know. It's quite amazing to see how the mind can do that. And, you know, it's just that very strong sense that we know how it's going to turn out, that the future is secure. And understandably, I mean, I'm not, you like to make light of it just because we want to be able to hold it comfortably as we look at it, you know, but really it's just all proceeding from some very instinctive impulses, you know, to try to create a world for ourselves that is comfortable and secure, you know, and which is completely understandable, and in many ways deluded. You know, we want to be able to see this. So again, we're not trying to stop it. Rather, it's just the objective here is to see it as such, and then you know, when you can do that, you can determine whether lingering there is appropriate or not. I mean, there's a time and a season for everything. You know, sometimes you have to plan. Sometimes when you're getting together with the family and you're going over the things you did, you remember and you enjoy the past together. You enjoy those memories, or you're still trying to hash some of them out, you know. This is all very appropriate. I don't think the Buddha is pointing to this to say, don't do it. It's just that it's painful when we do it without understanding it as such, or when we don't realize that we have options in relation to it all. Yeah, you know, I was talking to somebody a number of years ago, and she was tormented by a relationship with her sister. And one of the first things she said when we first started talking was, she hadn't seen or talked to her sister in 5 years. And as the conversation unfolded, she said something to the effect of, and our relationship has gotten worse and worse and worse over those 5 years. And they're like, you haven't talked to her, you haven't seen her, you know. How is that possible, right? But this is how it's possible, you know, in your head. Who hasn't done this, you know? In your head, it's getting worse and worse and worse. It's terrible. And we want to be able to see this. So there's a lot of things that one could zero in on here. And I thought just to give some examples of how it is that we do this and see if we can see ourselves in it and just shine the spotlight on it. So, you know, and a couple came to mind, looking at memories in particular, just the memory side of the equation. You know, and that one would be the pain that's associated with the memory of difficult moments, you know, that we've all had, embarrassing moments, things of this nature, you know. And the pain that's associated with the harm we've done. And sometimes it's out-and-out harm. Sometimes it's just thoughtlessness and, we move too fast. Things are going too fast, and you skip through things and say things without enough care, or just a certain kind of mindlessness or heedlessness, you know. And then certainly the pain that's associated with harm done to us, you know, that these are the things that keep reverberating in the mind, and keep in a way what's happening is that. They keep getting born back into existence because a number of possible things have happened that we didn't feel it when it happened. You know, some way the mind went into some protective mode, or perhaps we were children or anything like this, you know, where we didn't know how to let it rip, you know, which I think is the Buddhist way to deal with difficulty, is to feel it as fully as we can when it's happening. And then it doesn't get registered in the mind as sort of this thing that's undigested and that has to keep coming back up and coming back up and trying desperately to be digested, you know, to be received, to be accepted. So it's either that, or it wasn't dealt with at the time, or the last time the memory came up, and we didn't see it as such and breathed it back into life and started trying to deal with it or get lost in it, we've actually conditioned doing that again. You know, that's the pattern. You know, anytime you don't see it clearly, then the likelihood that it's going to come up again and that you won't see it clearly then is increased, you know. So our effort as practitioners is to see it clearly, to try to untangle some of this and understand what this mind is doing and how it's constructing things, certainly the past and the future, but also constructing a present pain that in some respects is unavoidable, but in some respects it can be managed in a very different way, such that it doesn't, we don't keep getting burdened by it, you know, and having to carry these weights. So, you know, there's just a lot of different examples. And I remember remembered one from a retreat a long time ago where this memory kept coming up of an embarrassing moment. It was at a public event. I'm on a stage in front of thousands of people, and I did something stupid, you know. And you know, I hadn't thought about it for years and years. This was many years earlier. And I hadn't thought about it for years and years. And as these things do when you're on retreat, they bubble up, don't they? It's like, where the heck did that come from, you know? But out of some unseen association or memory, you know, there it is, you know? And then because it's painful and the mind is struggling with that, the pain of that, it keeps playing. It keeps playing over and over again. Like, have you ever had this happen? It's like a broken record or a song, a jingle that you can't get out of your head. You know, you can't stop doing it. And what we don't realize is that the reason why we can't stop doing it is because we keep paying attention to it, you know. We're actually feeding it in the attending, you know. But until we see that, you're sort of at the mercy of it. It just keeps coming up and you keep feeling it and playing it and feeling the pain of it all over again. So, but this time, the pain of it got my attention, you know, and I just was so sick of it, you know. It's like, well, you know, is this what meditation is? Am I going to have to relive every painful moment of my life and try to figure out and try to do it differently, you know? And surely that's not true, but I didn't understand it yet at that time. And so, but I did remember to turn to it and just, you know, explore it a little bit. What's going on here? Why can't I let this painful memory go, this embarrassing moment? Why do I keep reliving it? You know, there's got to be some way to manage this differently. And so here's what I saw just in watching it. You know, and first of all, and this is going to sound so duh, you know, but first of all, I saw that I was remembering, you know, and that it was very, very powerful because I hadn't seen that before. It was, that's not happening. You're not in that. That's not happening. You're here and you're remembering. It's not the actual event, but you can't tell yourself that. When you're lost in it, can you? It feels like it's so real. You're living it all over again and over again and over again. It's very, very painful. And secondly, the thing that I noticed was that there was a view in my mind that it shouldn't have happened. And that's another duh, you know. But it did happen. No, it did happen. And this is what the mind is struggling with. And this view keeps winning out over the fact that it did happen, you know. It shouldn't have happened. And so what this sets us up for is all the shouldas, couldas, and wouldas, you know, all that stuff. If I had only done this, why didn't somebody stop me? Why didn't, you know, this kind of stuff starts feeding it and feeding it and feeding it. And, you know, very, very painful stuff. You know, if only I had done otherwise, it would have been, it might have played out differently. And then I just had to keep telling myself, but it didn't play out differently. It went like that. You know, this is what happened. And the heart has to find a way to embrace it, to let the reality of events in our lives and relationships and things like this, to let them be what they actually are. We have to find a way to embrace it. And I think the shocker for me as a Buddhist practitioner was realizing that that is the only way out. that is the only, there's no do-overs. There's no way to make it different than it was. It's done, you know. And the only freedom from the pain of it is actually quite limited, because the pain will come up when the memory comes up. But the freedom from the torment and going over it and over it and over it and over it is just seeing what the mind is doing and learning how to manage it. And it's through wisdom, through insight and understanding that the breakthroughs are going to happen here. So, you know, you can't do that if you keep getting caught up in it and trying to deal with it. One cannot... This whole practice of standing back and being aware of what's happening, just what we're doing here while we're sitting in meditation, you know, is enormously powerful. It's actually training the mind in a new methodology. You know, can I know what's happening and allow that it's happening? Can I just and can I train my mind to stay with the simple reality of that? So the breath meditation, the coming back to what is enormously powerful in this whole process. So never to recount discount the power of that. I sometimes have to remind myself, because, you know, sometimes you don't feel like meditating. You know, it's like, oh man, no, do it. This is the training that is making it possible to see things more clearly. So we have embarrassing moments that we're trying to redo. We're trying to make not be, you know, and that has to be seen through. And the reality of what did happen has to be embraced. And this is all very much associated with insight into dukkha, insight into the way things actually are, you know. And it's surprisingly a huge relief. You know, the mind is trying to find relief by making it different than it was. And actually the relief is in allowing that it is what it was, you know. And I mean, don't believe me. Look and see. See if that's actually true for you. So here's another one. You know, we all remember things that we wish we hadn't done, or things that we wish we had done differently, or things maybe that we neglected to do. And I've seen this a lot of late, talking to people who have, particularly who have nursed loved ones through illnesses or through the process of dying, you know. And some of you are quite a lot more knowledgeable about all this than me, but it's interesting to watch how we hold those kinds of moments. Across the board, I've seen so many people who are just so there for their loved ones. I mean, they're doing everything. They think about the things they like to eat. They think about what would make them more comfortable. They're running to the doctors, you know, calling all the friends and neighbors and keeping people abreast of what's happening, all these incredibly loving acts. And then maybe one day they have a bad moment, you know, where they snipped or became annoyed or aggravated with the whole process. And this is very, very heavy stuff and hard to sustain the lightness of heart while you're doing it. Watch the mind pounce, you know, even though you do a gazillion things right. You know, watch it, how it will pounce on the one thing that was thoughtless, heedless, right? And keep going over and over and over that. It's really quite amazing. I mean, it's quite foolish and amazing, you know. But we want to be able to tune into that process. You know, I was reminded just thinking about this or talking to somebody. I can't remember when it came up, but I'm a great fan of Gandhi's, and you know, just read and studied a lot about him. And one of the things that stands out in his autobiography, he talks about when his father was dying, but he was a young man. He had just gotten married, and he was in his teens, I think, when he married. And he was caring for his father, I'm pretty sure it was. And one time he decided not to go in and do his duty that day or that morning, and because he wanted to have sex with his wife. He was you know, young and driven by the lust of sexuality. And during that time is when his father died. And he said he spent his whole life tormented by that memory, you know. Every time it came up, just he couldn't believe that he had done that, you know, not able to receive or accept the fact that he wasn't there, you know. This is the kind of thing we want to be able to see and hopefully to be able to avoid, you know. And this kind of thing is very common with parents and partners and all of us, where we have... You know, maybe you're responsible for the care of young ones, and you go back over what you've done and what you didn't do right and all like that, you know. We can be plagued by these kinds of memories, and it's not necessary to keep rehashing it all. You know, I think the delusion is that there's something that we're learning by rehashing it, or some way that we can make it better than the way that it was. And I haven't seen that to be true. But you look and see. Maybe it's possible. But, you know, I just have come to the conclusion that literally all of it is just worry and anxiety in the mind, you know, and a way of trying to address things that isn't actually serving any useful purpose, you know. But so then you say, well, how do you deal with these painful memories? What is the best way to address it? And we'll get to it. But what we want to be able to see is how the mind will go on and on and on about this, and it'll do it either until it gets tired of it, or it picks something else up, and you know, it's like the something else takes center stage, you know, and it's no solution because we haven't seen into what's going on. But there's one aspect of this I just want to mention before I get into different approaches. That I've really found worth contemplating, and this is something that complicates sort of tangling with painful and difficult memories, and that is that if we have an image of ourselves as somebody who doesn't do heedless, thoughtless, unkind, insensitive, inconsiderate things, you know, then that's going to be a player here. That's going to tangle the mess a lot more. And I don't mean this as an indictment, but in the deluded state, in the unawakened state, it's always somebody else. It's always out there. It's always the difficulty is someplace else, you know. And we have this, I mean, I was shocked to see it in my own mind. You know, it's like, I'm always right. You know, I'm always the one who's doing it right. Everybody else is doing stupid things and hurting me. You know what I mean? And so in this exploration into my own mind, I've seen that that image, if we have that kind of image of ourselves, it's really a key player here. Because then what happens is when you actually do heedless, inconsiderate, thoughtless things, the mind can't hold it. It doesn't see it. It might not even see it as such, because the perception of ourselves is overriding what's actually happening. You know, we're caught in the view or the perception about it, and this is very important to see. It's just we're just attached to an idea about ourselves, you know, and not seeing the way that we actually are. And as I said, it's not an indictment, but we're all. We mess up, you know, we do unkind, inconsiderate things. And I don't know about you, but the realization of this for myself has been very, very powerful. And it's surprisingly, I'm much happier now since I realized that, you know. Since I know that I can, I can be pretty thoughtless at times, pretty inconsiderate. And so then when I am, you know, I can just say, yes, I did that. And the likelihood that I'll apologize, that I'll make amends, that I'll deal with it in the moment, you know, is much greater. Because I know that's arises. This mind is not awake yet. It's not fully awake. I think I may have shared with you at one time, I was reading the Satipatthana Sutta, and there's this one section in the third foundation of mindfulness where the Buddha's looking at the different states of mind. You have to be able to see the greedy mind and the non-greedy mind and basically see them with the same tone. You know, just there's no judgment about which way you are, you know. And but the last little bit in that section is one needs to see the awakened mind as the awakened mind and the unawakened mind as the unawakened mind. You know, and one time reading that, it just totally hit me. Oh, this mind isn't awake yet, you know? And then I had this huge sense of relief, you know? It was like, that explains everything, you know? Oh, that's okay. And you could feel this incredible tension just kind of drop out of the system, you know? I get it. Okay, and then followed by an arousal of interest, and an investigation. Like, oh, I don't see. Oh, well, let me see. How can I see? You know, what do I need to do to see more clearly? It was very, very powerful. I mean, yeah, in a way, for me anyway, a kind of a turning point. So one thing that's very, very important in all of this is to realize that the pain that's associated with memories, and you know, we're talking about painful memories here, will always arise with that memory. Will always arise with that memory. And so this idea that you know, you want to get rid of the pain associated with the memory is a very foolish notion. You know, the Buddha is very clear on this, that pleasure and pain and neither arise with every single moment of contact, and that includes memory, right? So if there is pain associated with an event that we've been involved in or that's happened to us, then that is going to arise when the memory of that comes up. And somehow just knowing that is like, oh, okay. So, you know, that gives you some information that helps offset the tendency to try to make that not happen, which is crazy. But also just to recognize how the whole process is playing out. So it's going to come up, but over time it can change. You know, you've heard the expression that time heals, you know, time heals all wounds. And it's interesting to look at that as a phenomenon. Is that true? And what's going on in that? And I submit, and you see if this is true yourself, that what's going on in that is that over time, as the memory of that event arises, the heart embraces it increasingly as the years go by. And so that embracing of what actually happened, whether it's the death of a loved one or some painful experience, is what's making the whole thing soften and lighten up, right? It's the accepting. It's the embracing of it that's doing that. I mean, I know they don't really mean time heals it, but over time, that's what's happening. So the painful memory doesn't go away, but it doesn't have to. Yeah, and that, I don't know about you, but I find that very liberating. It's like, oh, yeah, okay. Every time I think of that thing, just the same way as every time I think of Aunt Rose, you know, I just get a grin. Aunt Rose! You know, the pleasure associated with that memory always comes up with it, you know. So Ajahn Chah says so many wonderful things, and this one quote where he's often quoted about the still forest pool is very, very helpful in this. You know, recognizing that the healing of the wound is really in accepting that it happened, right? And he says that the all kinds of strange and painful and wonderful things will come into the mind, but over the years of practice, you will be still. You know, and he points to this as the happiness of the Buddha. So that, I mean, just to contemplate that there's a way to be knowing memory as memory and watching it come up, even feeling the pain of it and watching it move on through. Very, very powerful stuff. So the harm done to us by others is also a biggie. And this is the same kind of process that we're looking at in dealing with the memory of the harm that we've done. And what happens here is that, you know, many, many people have had difficult things happen in their past, very, very painful experiences. And these get stored as painful memories. And to the extent that there was a tremendous pain in the event itself, then that the enormity of that pain keeps coming up. And we end up being afflicted by it and afflicted by it over and over and over and over again, mostly because we're not seeing it because it was painful, but we're not seeing it as such. And so some element of the fact of that keeps getting born back or breathed back into life. And this is what attachment to memory actually does. And so the difficulty here is, you know, is that we end up defining ourselves as wounded people because of the harm that has been done to us in the past. And one of the monks, the head of our lineage, said this one time, and it really hit me. I didn't like it at first, But he said, you will never be free as long as you keep perceiving yourself as a wounded person. It will never happen. Because every time that memory of that wounding comes up, you'll be born back into it. You won't relate to it with the necessary non-attachment to be able to have insight, to understand what's actually going on in that. Now, it's complex, and you know, one certainly doesn't want to diminish the pain that people have suffered. You know, many people have suffered great harm at the hands of other people. I mean, what human beings can do to one another just boggles the mind. You know, but I think all that we're saying here, it's just that the common response to that is not ultimately liberating. You know, that the age-old ways of dealing with that, certainly defining ourselves as wounded and then trying to overcome that in one way or another, and not being able to see that we keep grabbing hold of painful stuff, painful memories, and breathing them back into life. So it's not just the memory itself that we grab, but it's all the dis-ease and the pain that's associated with it. You know, what the Buddha is saying very clearly here is that memory, in a way, stores all of our psychological and emotional dis-ease. You know, and if we don't understand its nature and learn how to work with it skillfully, then you can continue to be afflicted by painful events for lifetimes. You know, so you know the potential here for freedom has to get our attention. You know that you've got one option on this hand and another option on the other, and where are we going to turn? Where are we going to go with it? So, you know, just trying to fix difficulties in our life is very, very understandable. And one isn't saying that at all. You know, they don't want to diminish that effort, but or the intention, the heart behind it. But it's not really possible to fix it. Things happened. And I think what the Buddha is pointing to is that we have to find a way to embrace the reality of what's happened in our lives. And so, I mean, I'm talking about some heavy, heavy things here, but there's just the daily barbs and attacks, you know, and I mean, how many times a day is there one form of a jab or another, you know, that we just keep going over? Have you ever done this? It's like, you know, this person at work or their attitude or the way that they are, you just keep going over and over and over and over and over it. You know, it's this kind of stuff. It's got very practical manifestations. Being able to see what's going on in the mind so that we can intercept this kind of activity on any given day. And you know that this is the stuff you sit with in meditation, you know. It's like, oh God, you know, no wonder people don't want to meditate sometimes. It's brutal, you know, you just got to go over and over and over this stuff. So, I mean, I guess the question here is, wouldn't it be great to be free of it? Wouldn't it be great to really understand how to respond to our own mental arisings and all of the stuff that comes with them in a different way, such that we aren't burdened by this. The Buddha said that attachment to the aggregates, and in this case, attachment to memory, is like walking around life carrying a huge rock. And all you have to do is put the rock down. Sounds simple, doesn't it? All you have to do is stop doing that and see it, you know? So much of the pain and suffering that we endure through our own regurgitating, undigested emotional stuff, you know, can be altered, changed in somewhat. So this all has to be untangled, you know. And the key here is found in just understanding memory as a perception that arises in the mind when the conditions are right for it to arise. And what will accompany that is all of the feelings and the impressions that occurred at the time that the event actually took place. Just to know it as such, and to see that it's all happening here, it's all happening now. And so, interestingly, part of why the tangle gets stirred up is that the mind, and this is fascinating to realize or watch, the mind is actually in this moment trying to deal with the pain of remembering it. And very quickly it becomes, you think you're dealing with the pain of the event, but it's actually the memory, as I said, comes up and it brings a lot of pain with it. And this mind is trying not to feel that pain right here, right now. And that begins the whole tangle. You know, so that's a huge one to be able to see. It's actually all present time stuff. You know, we're not dealing with the past at all. You know, it's all happening right here, right now. And we want to be able to see that. So one of the things that I have found very effective is that we really want to be able to see that, every arising arises, reaches a peak. It's like a wave. It reaches a peak, it crests, the wave breaks, and it washes to shore. Every single moment is like that, whatever it is. Happy feelings, sad feelings, it doesn't matter. It's all operating like that. Everything has like 3 seconds of fame, if that. It's probably a lot less than that, you know. And so our job as practitioners, especially when it comes to this kind of thing, is to ride the wave. It's like you've got to become a good surfer and not get caught in it, just to be able to see, oh, there it is, you know, and here comes that memory, that awful thing that happened. And I would say, I would submit, give it all you got when it happens, you know. And it's like, oh, there it is, that thing that happened, oh, that was so awful. Oh, I hated it. Didn't that hurt? Oh, it was, you can actually ride it like that and let it be. But what you're doing is you're knowing it and you're not grabbing it. You're just riding the wave, letting it peak, letting it move on through and washed ashore. And that is, in the long and short of it, how to deal with painful memories. You know, they've got to play out in a way. And if we don't grab them, then those waves will come less frequently. They'll come with less intensity over time. And there's a tremendous freedom in just in that simple thing. So inhale and take it in, you know, exhale, let it out, that kind of thing, you know, literally. And that's the, in a way, that's the way we practice with. That's the Buddhist practice way of receiving these kinds of things. It's an arisen phenomenon. That's all it is. It's no different than a hot flash, you know. It's no different than a pain in the knee that crystallizes and then breaks up, you know. It's no different than a toothache or a headache that comes and goes, you know. But because it's a mental event, we give it a lot more vitality. We breathe it back into life more fully. We identify with it more fully. So I guess that the idea here is to see that and recognize and that it's one can relate more impersonally to it all. So imagining and planning are just the flip side of all of this, you know. Certainly a lot to be said about it, but just to recognize that, you know, we get ideas and we don't see them as such. And then the mind starts to play with it and build a world and project ourselves into that world, which in essence creates our future, you know, we think, you know. But I don't know about you, even before practice, I began to realize that once I had imagined a future, I could be pretty well guaranteed that that's not what was going to happen, you know. So you start to see that over and over again, and it breaks apart the attachment to these kinds of things. And little by little, over the years of practice, both with memories and imaginings and planning and all that, what you begin to see happening is sort of like a force field starts to develop around them, you know, where, you know, here it comes, you go, you know, or here comes this one, you know, the mind is less interested, much less interested, and certainly much less attached, because it's seen what's going on and all that. So there's certainly a lot more that one could say, but just to consider the freedom that we can find with all of these things we've been looking at, and just realizing this is what the mind does. This is the way the mind behaves, and to be able to watch the mind behave the way it behaves, and not make it you, not be born into it and not get all tangled with it, which is one thing if it's a happy stuff. You know, it's a whole nother story when it's difficult stuff, you know, and that gets our attention. You know, the implications for dealing with very difficult histories, it's just phenomenal. So let me just stop there and see. We have a few minutes if anybody has some questions. Yeah, please. Let it be. It was a painful situation. You can't change it. We can't change it. And the mind is trying to make it not be. I just want to say, if it only took you 40 years, you're really good.
In meditation,
yeah.
Is there a way to bring that pain into focus? I mean, is there...
To go ahead. I mean, I tend to be dramatic, so I'll precede this by saying that. But I do find it very, very helpful to just give it all you got. Wail, punch a wall. I've punched walls, and just getting to feel what it was that I'm trying not to feel. It's like. You know, it just...
Is it really a release?
I'm trying to touch what I haven't wanted to touch. And feel it. And I'm not suggesting you go around punching walls, but, you know, to wail if you have to, cry. I mean, you know, one of the scenes from a movie that I absolutely love, I may have said this before, but in that movie Cabaret, where... she just had the need to just scream at the top of her lungs. And so she found this railroad trellis, and she knew when the trains were going by. She had their schedules, and she would go under the trellis when the train was going by and just, you know, just let it rip, you know. And nobody could hear her because the train was so loud, you know. you know, you find your own ways, but stop. The fight. Stop the bit that is not wanting it to be there. And you find what's amazing is you find you not only can bear it, you're actually bearing it. You know, we have this human heart has a tremendous capacity. You know, and if you can't bear it, you'll either black out or you'll die. So. Some comfort in that. Somewhere along the line, it's either coming from external sources that somebody, that's part of the memory, that somebody told us we should be ashamed, or we have a sense of shame in ourselves. And it's a tricky one. Because if we've done harm, you know, then you may find this surprising, but in Buddhism, that quality to feel shame, and it's not the same way we look at it as the West, is highly, highly valued. It's a very important, it's called hiri, it's called moral shame, and that's the pain that you feel for having done harm. And if you don't have that, then, you know, waking up is very, very difficult. You know, you want to be able to feel that. then that's more, just the inability to see and accept our own shortcut, our own, unawake state that causes us to be heedless or thoughtless in a given moment. We're flawed beings, you know, that we have imperfect moments, we do imperfect things. To allow, once you get to a place where you allow that, then when you do them, they're not the big deal that we make them out to be. It's all tied up with insight into dukkha, I think, you know, that to the extent that we get that, then it's more forgivable. It's more acceptable when it happens. And so the mind doesn't pounce on it and keep cogitating, going over it and over it. Yeah? Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I would just kind of soak in, yeah, okay, I did that. So I'll hang around if anybody wants to talk some, but I do want to acknowledge that the time is up if you need to go. Okay, and thank you again for a lovely couple of weeks. I hope I'll see some of you tomorrow night at the Dhamma practice discussion. And do take care until our paths cross again.